first playoff game, they should win about 67-3.
67-3? God, I hope we're playing the 49ers in our first playoff game then.
No, just kidding. But hey, does Rex Grossman just add a whole new dimension to that offense or what?
You're not kidding. Everyone seems happy and pumped up again. I don't understand it.
Oh. And if Muhammad had caught the passes, they would have won it by about 3 touchdowns.
What's going on with that guy? He can't catch anything.
Oh,
I saw about 4 catches he should have caught. You know, some of them may have been difficult, some of them were easy. He should have caught every one of them that was thrown to him.
One touchdown pass in the fourth quarter, a professional catcher.
Oh, God, he's got to catch that ball. You're not kidding.
So that was disappointing, but Grossman looks like a seasoned veteran out there.
Yeah, Grossman's looking real good out there.
Oh.
He's got a lot of zip to that ball, huh?
Oh, no kidding. Zip and just pinpoint. Pinpoint accuracy for the most part.
Exactly.
He could have won up for grabs, but...
Well, he couldn't step into that one either, so...
And what was the third and long anyway, right? So it was like a punt.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's exciting.
Real good news for the Bears. Right,
so they got the first round bye and home team on the first round, I believe. Home field advantage, I should say.
Yeah, so we have at least one playoff game at home then, huh?
Right, and then if they win that, theoretically they may meet Seattle, which might be somewhat difficult.
Well, that's going to be a good game.
But of course, I understand Seattle did beat the Colts, but the Colts had the second string in.
Yeah, the Colts have done for the year. They lost that one game and decided to go with their second string and save up everybody.
Save up for everybody. Well, anyway, it's going to be fun. All right, let's go on to the stupid and or outrageous regulation of the week. And I think I want to talk a little bit more about domestic spying.
Mm.
The NSA, the most super secret organization in the federal government, the National Security Agency. Spying on Americans without any warrants at all. And Bush thinks it's just hunky-dory. It's just wonderful. I am protecting our citizens. As far as I'm concerned, it's grounds for impeachment. The guy just has no regard for the Constitution, no regard for the rule of law. When it concerns him, when it concerns other people, maybe he has a regard for the rule of law, he thinks. But that's the rule book for him, the Constitution, and to do that without a search warrant is outrageous, absolutely outrageous. I hope this story has some legs. I'm starting to think it has a few legs, and I think there's even some conservative Republicans that are quite upset with what's going on. You can't have the, what people, a lot of people don't understand is that the Founding Fathers put in the Bill of Rights. And the Constitution, which restricts the government's powers to very specific functions, the reason they did not put that in to restrict government during peacetime, during easy time, the whole point, because that's easy to do, the whole point of the Constitution's Bill of Rights was to restrict government in the more difficult times, like in times of war. It was never intended to give the president or the government in general dictatorial powers during war. And Bush is making this excuse that we're at war, but actually war hasn't even been declared anyway. So it's really outrageous. I mean, Congress, of course, has the power to declare war, not the president. And they've relinquished that responsibility. So I'm hoping that people will realize what's going on and that, one story after another just shows that this is an administration totally out of control. Of course, the problem is if you impeach Bush and get him out of office, then you got Cheney, who's even worse. Maybe they need to go after Cheney first. Well, one can dream, anyway.
Yikes. Who's up after Cheney?
Let's see. That would be, I believe, the Secretary of State, isn't it? I think it's the next one in line.
I believe so.
If they got rid of Cheney first, then they would appoint. They would appoint and approve a vice president, like they did under Nixon when Agnew resigned, and they picked Ford for vice president. So the line, chain of command is more for like if there's some kind of catastrophe.
Right.
Whatever. So, but if it's catastrophe, it would be Condoleezza, I believe, would be president. So, all right. Well, at any rate, we are going to have a guest today. His name's Paul Jacob. He's been on the program before. He's the head of U.S. term limits, which actually has kind of gone down. You know, we don't really hear much about term limits for congressmen and legislators anymore, and I think the push for that has kind of waned a little bit. We'll talk to Paul about that. He also has he does an op-ed that appears in various newspapers from time to time, and very good called Common Sense. So we'll talk to Paul Jacob of U.S. Term Limits after a few messages.
Are you politically homeless? Are you tired of being taxed and regulated by the Democrats and regulated and taxed by the Republicans? Would you like to pursue your own dreams without the interference of government? Well then, America's most successful upcoming party, the Libertarian Party, is your political home. The Fox Valley Libertarian Party is your local libertarian group working hard to restore the freedoms our country once held dear. Yes, you can fight City Hall and win. We did. Find out how. With your help, we will make the 21st century the century of liberty for all. We hold monthly meetings at Baroni's Pizza, 3 Lakewood Plaza, 1 block west of Route 25 off of Bessinger Drive in Carpentersville on the last Wednesday of every month at 7 o'clock p.m. Call 847-426-1974 for more information. That's 847-426-1974. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
You get what you pay for. Efficient, high-quality service from Perfect Painting and Decorating. In business under the same name since 1975, Perfect Painting and Decorating supplies superior service for both interior and exterior painting, decorative finishing, wallpapering, plastering, drywall and taping, and wood refinishing. For your decorating needs, Perfect Painting and Decorating can custom finish right on the job site. Imagine no interruptions, thorough preparation, professional tradesmen, top-of-the-line materials, meticulous cleanup. Get the job done right the first time. It may cost a bit more for quality, but it's worth it. For a free estimate, call Perfect Painting and Decorating at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974. You'll be glad you did.
Hello, friends. This is Kenneth John, and Freedom Rings needs your help. I would like to get back to a two-hour show, but that costs money. You can help by contributing to the Heartland Institute, Illinois' own libertarian think tank, with a tax-deductible contribution. The Heartland Institute is an independent, nonprofit research organization in operation for 17 years. Joseph Bass, Heartland's president, is a frequent guest on this program. 90% of what you contribute to Heartland comes back to Freedom Rings to pay for this ad. By contributing $25 or more, you will receive monthly publications including School Reform News, Environment and Climate News, and The Heartlander, the Heartland Institute's monthly newsletter. So please call 312-377-4000 to contribute and be sure to mention Freedom Rings. That's 312-377-4000. Or you can contribute by credit card on the internet by going to Heartland's website at heartland.org. Again, remember to mention Freedom Rings, and thank you for your support.
We are back with Freedom Rings, and, I'd like to welcome to the show right now a really good colleague and friend of mine, Paul Jacob of U.S. Term Limits. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Kenneth. Thanks for having me.
So are you, I'm sorry, I never get your position right. I'm not too good on details. Executive Director of U.S.
Well,
Term Limits?
Well, I was an executive director for years. I am now a senior fellow, which means I've been put out to pasture. But
you're retired, huh? You just retired, and you're writing your common sense columns and just raking all the royalty bills from the columns, huh?
That's right. I'm just clipping coupons.
That's the life of a political libertarian cell activist, right? It's just
that and candy coming in hot water and eating crackers.
Well, I've been enjoying, by the way, I've been really enjoying your columns. They're always written very well, so congratulations on those. And I know they've been seen in what USA Today, New York Daily News, Roll Call, Washington Times, and the Chicago Tribune. So congratulations. The Chicago Tribune, of course, anytime they see the word libertarian, you probably avoid the word that term anyway, but they do not like putting the word libertarian in their newspaper.
Well, I've gotten one column in there, and it didn't specifically mention the word libertarian, but it's amazing how much more that term gets used these days than years ago, and it doesn't always get used correctly, but I think you have a public that is increasingly disenfranchised and just feels like Republicans and Democrats. The poll numbers show that both of them are really in the toilet, and one reason why there's a question, I think, whether Republicans will keep power or not is because the main choice that people have are the Democrats. They don't like
the Democrats have no plan, but the Republicans' power are so arrogant with their power, it's got to scare a lot of people. We got Bush thinking that it's just okay. Spy on Americans without any kind of warrant or court supervision at all.
Yeah, it really is. I think incredible that the Bush administration has on a whole host of things, and I think it's why the nomination of Myers was so created such a tidal wave on the in conservative circles and other circles. I think. Because the only thing that Bush has really offered to conservatives and to libertarians to some degree, and that some of his court picks have been pretty good, not just on conservative, social issues, but on economic issues and on the whole sense that the federal government might have some limitations under the Commerce Clause and other things. But when he picked her, I think it sent a message that what can you get from this president? He spends like crazy. His biggest entitlement program in decades comes from a Republican Congress and a Republican president. And then the national security stuff, which is just absolutely frightening. And you don't have to be a libertarian to be frightened by what they are doing. When the president can say somebody's a bad guy and therefore you can hold them in jail, what's happened to the Constitution? When the president can spy on people without any type of check, what's happened to the Constitution?
Well, it's, unfortunately, when you have, I would say, this triumvirate of cases, which includes the Kelo versus New London, Connecticut, which really took away completely the property right, private property rights with that eminent domain case, and the Gonzalez versus Rage, which took away states' rights as far as the medical marijuana in California, and then of course the Incumbent Protection Act, funding the Kemp-Feingold bill, which took away free speech. I don't know. It is.
Well, and I think you're right on the mark with those three decisions. And in fact, I've written columns on all three because I think they're huge decisions. The McCain-Feingold, which for years and years and years, if it isn't reversed, is going to create a political environment in which the powerful have plenty of access to speak out, but the little guys don't. And then you look at the other decisions, we really had a number of people, Scalia included, on the race decision about medical marijuana, decide that, well, if we don't like something, then states' rights no longer apply.
Yeah, that was the most intellectually dishonest move I've ever seen Scalia make. That was just incredible.
It was, and it points to the increasing problem we have, which is that we have a bitter fight between Republicans and Democrats over what? Really not over policy. They seem to be doing the same things. Clinton borrowed half the Republican plays. Bush is borrowing the Democratic plays. They all believe in bigger and bigger government. but they're fighting over who gets to spend our cash.
Exactly. Who gets to spend our cash, and they'll just use these erroneous arguments. Well, we'll be more moral about it. We won't be, you know, so corrupt like these other guys.
Well, more efficient. It's interesting that when people are fighting about ideas, the battles seem to be much more, peaceful and gentle. But when they're fighting about cash, they're pretty vicious, and I think that's why Washington is so vicious these days. And, of course, it invariably spills over into the judiciary. And, you know, one of the things that doesn't get talked about enough, too, is all these new quasi-judicial bodies like the Federal Election Commission that are now comprised of an equal number of Republican and Democratic appointments.
Yeah, so it's not bipartisan, it's bipartisan.
Yes, and what happens then, of course, is that if the crime you're committing or not committing is because you're a Republican or a Democrat, you've got protection. In fact, they really can't enforce the law against people who have good political connections because they've set it up in that way. But if you're Ross Perot, if you're the Libertarian Party, if you're somebody else, they can shut you down in a minute. And it's why the FEC has always been completely dismissive to third parties, to independent candidacies, and has always done the bidding of the Republicans and Democrats because that's the way it was set up. And some people might say, well, we have a two-party system, except that the founders of this country warned us against doing that, warned us against having factions control the government, and that's what the two major parties are. And it'd be one thing if they were factions that believed in something, and at the grassroots they do, but in Washington, neither of these parties believes in anything. They believe in power. And in money.
Absolutely. Power. And you mentioned the power of the FEC, and you may be aware of this. What happened here in Illinois not too long ago was the Republicans were violating the law as far as when they would be having to meeting a deadline for filing for, I think, governor. And so they needed to have a special legislation passed in Springfield in order for them to get their candidate on the ballot. It might have been for president. I can't remember. Actually, I think it was for president. And on the other hand, the Democratic Party had all these fines by the State Board of Elections for, you know, or late filing or whatever. And so, of course, the Republicans made a deal. The Democrats would allow their candidate to get on the ballot if the Republicans would vote to relinquish all their debts to the Board of Elections. The commission, just like the FEC in Washington.
Right.
And so that's exactly what happens by legislation, which is really, isn't that a bill of attainder, actually, when you think about it?
You know, I'm not familiar enough with the legal term and the ins and outs of that to know, but it is incredible that we set up what are basically judicial-type bodies this way, and it is, you see it more and more. I wrote a column this week about the situation in Michigan where the Board of Canvassers, which is really their only duty is to count signatures on petitions either for candidates or for issues trying to make it on the ballot because they have a vibrant initiative process, unlike Illinois, unfortunately. But this board of canvassers is comprised of two Democrats and two Republicans. And a year or so ago, they refused to certify a gay marriage ban initiative. Whether you agree or disagree with that particular law, it had enough signatures. They refused to allow Nader to be on the ballot. Now, in both cases, the Court of Appeals came in and overruled them and said, you have no power whatsoever to do that. Well, just now, they did the same thing with the Michigan Civil Rights Initiative, which would ban affirmative action in certain cases. And again, the politicians on this board refused to do their job, refused to certify it. There was a near riot by a bunch of agitators to shut down the meeting so that they couldn't put this on the ballot. And it's incredible to me that increasingly we hear the proponents of big government arguing against the public having any right to vote on anything. They don't like the idea of mere citizens exercising a right to make policy. That should all be done by experts who've been trained in big government-itis or something.
Well, yeah, that's all, as you said, it's all about power, and it's really a unit-powered party system. Now, of course, U.S. term limits has been advocating for a long time and working towards limiting this power by limiting the terms of congressmen and state legislatures. I mean, you know, we don't hear much about that lately, Paul. What is going on with that?
Well, there's been really a sweep of the country during the 90s, and it's continued at the local level with local term limits being passed different places. But during the 90s, you had a number of states. There are now 15 states that have term limits on their legislature. You have 36 governors who were term limited. The president, of course, is term limited by constitutional amendment. And right now you have 9 of the largest 10 cities in the country term limited, hundreds of other cities and counties. We did an analysis a couple of years ago that found that 75% of the public has either state or local office holders who work under term limits. So it's a concept that the American people like, they're very comfortable with, they understand. Opponents sometimes say it's a meat axe approach. Well, it does what it says it's going to do, which is to limit how long any one person can stay in office. And it's in the states that have it, it has allowed tremendous change, a lot of new people serve. There have been no catastrophes where somehow, you know, we couldn't figure out how to run government without the experts that told us we couldn't do without them. So the results have been very good. The problem term limits has is really the problem the American people have, and that is we have to have some system by which the public can overrule their so-called servants. We elect people to public office. They have a public trust. They're supposed to represent us. And I think we all know it. And it's not about Democrats or Republicans. It's about power-hungry politicians who, when they're in office, start to do what's in their best interest, not in what the best interest of the people and what the people want. So well, in almost all the initiative states, you have term limits. Where you don't have term limits, there are in cities and counties and states that don't have the initiative process.
I see. And it would seem to me, as our founding fathers envisioned, that maybe a lot of these draconian laws wouldn't be passed if these legislators and congressmen had to go back after a few years and live as private citizens under the laws that they promote.
Well, I think that's exactly right. It has a real impact on you, what your personal circumstance is, and we have most of the people who are in Washington see it as a career. They don't see themselves ever doing anything but being in power in Washington. And not only are they removed physically much of the time from the states they represent, you know, their kids going to school in the Washington, D.C. area, they don't read the local paper, they read the Washington Post. They're dealing day in, day out with people in Washington, D.C. And after, you know, a decade or two or three, or in the case of somebody like Robert Byrd, 5, you start to really not represent your constituents at all. You represent Washington, D.C. back to your constituents. And, I mean, look at the things that happen in Washington. These bridges to nowhere that have been talked about so much in Alaska, where they're spending, you know, tens of millions of dollars on bridges that only serve, you know, a few hundred, or in one case, about 12 people in a certain island.
Governor Stevens is proud to support that, Paul.
Well, and here's the other thing. Most people heard on their televisions, in news reports, that was stopped, that they're not going to do that. Well, it wasn't stopped at all. They gave Alaska the money. They just didn't earmark it for that particular thing, but there was a wink and a nod, and now those bridges are back. So even when the whole country rises up against pork barrel spending, we don't have any control, any way to stop it. And we need at the local level, at the state level, and ultimately at the federal level, and a process, which 24 states have now, a process for citizens to put measures directly on the ballot. If we had that, we'd have term limits, we'd have other restraints on government, limits that would allow the public to control the government instead of the other way around.
What do you say to those, and libertarians are among them, who say that term limits are no good because, as the founding fathers believe, that democracy leads to mob rule, and then what you're really talking about is pure democracy, and you're going to have, you know, 51% voting to take away from the other 49%.
Well, you know, there's a lot of mixing of apples and oranges when we talk about democracy. You always have the people who say, oh, we're not a democracy, and of course, we're not a pure democracy. I don't know that there was ever a pure democracy. But what we have is a republic in which certain rights are guaranteed to citizens without super extraordinary political changes to that. You'd have to amend the Constitution to take away our right to free speech, even though, unfortunately, McCain-Feingold did that and the Supreme Court upheld it. Theoretically, anyway, Kenneth, we still have free speech. But to not digress, that's the republic. Now, when we elect someone to office or when we run that government, we want it to be run in as democratic a means as possible. We want the public to have control, the citizens, not the politicians. And there are those now who claim that, well, we need a representative form of government. Anytime you suggest that citizens can vote directly on something, who are these folks? Well, they're the big government folks. That's who they are. They want government to grow as big as possible, and they've always championed the little guy as an excuse for some program to redistribute wealth, where they get a big cut usually. But when it comes to democracy, all of a sudden they don't like the little guy anymore because they don't trust the little guy to vote the way they tell him to. And so we have to have a system in which we have as much democracy as possible within the realm that government's supposed to decide. Government doesn't have a right to decide what you do in your home, what you do in your bedroom, what books you read, whether you can start a business or not. Those are all fundamental rights. But to the degree that government has to be run, which it does, we have to do that democratically. And that means we have to empower citizens to be able to overrule their self-proclaimed masters, the politicians and the bureaucrats and the public employees unions and the whole cabal in Washington of big corporations and unions and other people who are tax eaters.
We're talking with Paul Jacob. He is a senior fellow with the U.S. Term Limits. The phone number here is 847-931-1410. That's 931-1410. Give us a call. Have any observations, analyses, or questions, please give us a call. And we will be back after a few messages.
We reduce children to their lowest common denominator. 57% of us are functionally illiterate.
For us, excellence is a thing of the past.
We killed the teachers and students at Columbine.
We are all trained to follow orders.
Good.
We have learned to be tolerant of all people, except whites, Christians, and males.
27% of us are put on drugs.
The rest of us take the illegal ones.
Two-thirds of us believe that from each according to his ability to each according to his need is part of the preamble to the U.S. Constitution.
7 out of 10 of us don't know either of the senators in our state.
We just placed 19th out of 21 countries on math scores, ahead of the Ivory Coast and Sri Lanka.
We elected Bill Clinton as president
and re-elected him.
And 9 out of 10 of us are products of the public school.
This message paid for by the Illinois Indoctrinators Association.
Ever think that you should be getting more out of your computer? Maybe you need a go-to tech guy. A go-to tech guy is somebody who knows computers inside and out and can help you with yours. John Spazieri is a real go-to tech guy. John Spazieri is a 20-year tech veteran who can help you get more out of your computer. Need email or internet setup and training? Call John. Want to simply learn to do things faster? Call John. John Spazieri comes to your home, works with you one-on-one on your machine, and shows you step-by-step how to do things you've always wanted to do with your computer. Want a new computer system set up? Call John. Need fast, convenient repairs? Call John. Call John Spazzeri at area code 630-858-6933. That's 630-858-6933. John Spazzeri. Make him your go-to tech guy. I consider trial by jury as the...